Oh, Vicky, are you there? I am calling you on the phone.
Hello.
Oh, I didn't even ring. You picked up. You must have been going to make an outgoing call just as I called.
Yeah, it didn't ring here either. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, it might be psychic. Sometimes someone is really strongly in my thoughts, and then they call. And if
Yeah.
they're long dead, that can be disconcerting.
Yeah, I often get a letter from people when I think about them.
Wow. Now, do you get the letter as you're thinking about them, or do they write the letter as you're thinking about them and then you get it a week later?
It arrives, I think about them and the letter arrives, or I think about them and they send me a message, particularly if they're paranoid that they're supposed to be doing something in my direction. So it'll be like an embarrassed message.
I'm sorry. I know you were thinking about me.
Yes.
That's embarrassing.
Yes.
A lot of times I think, I wonder if people are thinking about me, and they turn on the radio and they go, oh, I was just thinking about Hardy. And then now he's on the radio, but I knew that because it's on the schedule. So I
Yeah,
don't know.
I kind of think that's not psychic.
That might not be psychic.
No.
I used to feel that way about television. I'd go, oh, it's 8 o'clock on a Friday. I bet the Brady Bunch is on. And then it would be on. But that's because I'd just been reading TV Guide, and that puts ideas in your head. Did you ever read the television guide where it would sum up a show?
The Radio Times.
Yeah, it would sum up a show in just a paragraph, and you'd think, well, now do I want to see that?
Yeah, I don't know what the Radio Times is called now, but it used to be called the Radio Times, I guess, before the TV. And they just carried on calling it the Radio Times.
Oh, even though it was the picture radio.
Yeah, and maybe it became the Radio and TV Times.
That's right. Just like here, they had TV Guide back in the 1900s before there was even radio. I don't know what it must have meant something different. Maybe not. I'm confusing it with with something
With
else.
reality?
Well, I was I'm trying to think of this old time magazine and it slipped my. I'm not as sharp as I used to be. I don't think you can say that for any tool.
When were you sharp?
Again, exactly. I don't know if I'm supposed to be sharp.
No.
Maybe I'm a blunt instrument.
Blunt's good.
Police Gazette.
I'm
That's what
doing
I
my
was trying to
best.
think
Doing my
of.
best to be blunt right now.
Okay, can we go back and do the TV Guide joke again so I can
Yeah,
say Police
okay.
Gazette? All right, I can
Foley.
edit this. Don't worry,
Foley.
none of this is going to be in order. It's all going to
Okay.
be edited and we're going to sound brilliant. Now, the reason I am speaking to you, Vicky, is because I want someone else to do half of my show this week
I know you do.
because I'm a nervous wreck. Why are you a nervous wreck, Hardy? I almost don't need you.
Who, me?
Because I'm asking my own questions. Go, you say that. That's your line. Why are you a nervous wreck, Hardy?
Why are you a nervous wreck, Hearty?
Okay, can I get you to just cut out the space between wreck and Hardy a little? Let's just do that one more time. Take two.
Why are you a nervous wreck, Hearty?
All right, still, you're putting a lot of space between wreck and Hardy.
Why are
And
you a nervous wreck, Hearty?
that sounds great. Well, I'm glad you asked that again.
I'm not.
I have. You always pay the price for speaking to me.
Yeah,
I wonder if
sorry.
people. I assume people know that we're close friends and we respect each other and
Well,
that we
none of
do
my
this.
people know because before I came on here, like my husband, I said, "Oh, I'm going to record for an hour with Hearty because he hasn't got any ideas for his show because he's stressed out." And he said, "All right." And he said, "Oh, do you tell anyone that you're doing that?" I said, "No."
Oh no.
Because
Well, you're ashamed.
if I tell people that I'm doing this,
Yes.
they'll listen, and
Oh, I know.
then I
Oh.
just can't be normal.
I know. I know. I feel the same way, and it's my show every week.
Yeah, I
I
mean,
go, oh.
this is where we say, I don't know. This is where I tell you, I don't know when you're being hearty white anyway.
Oh, I know. Whoa.
Yeah.
Why people might listen to me.
But you think you're distinctly different as Hearty White to...
I am. Why are you breaking the third wall? I am Hearty White. Why are you doing that? I'm going to have to take all this out.
Why?
Because let's say you were on Pee Wee's Playhouse and you go, and you kept calling me Paul or something.
I didn't. I call you Hearty.
I know, but you sound like hard, like I'm not Hearty White during the week.
Well, you are, aren't you?
Literally, everybody calls me Hearty White.
I now, do.
I get more dramatic on the radio, so I might go, oh, but I'm no, really no different.
Well, like Scooby-Doo.
No, like Jerry Clower.
Do Scooby-Doo.
What? Oh, you like
Scooby Snacks.
Scooby Snacks. But oh, people are gonna love that. Someone just recommended your show to me, and now I don't see what they see in it. That's the thing about being wonderfully inconsistent. Is that I feel like I make fools of people who like my show.
Yeah,
because sometimes they'll go, oh, because I'm wildly inconsistent, and
but
I always I'm afraid.
Reality is mostly inconsistent, apart from two major points. In reality, two inevitable things happen in reality, and everything else is just flailing wildly, inconsequential, framed as consequential. But supposedly, once we're doing entertainment or somehow taking some higher position to other people, we're supposed to have some kind of consequential nature to what we're doing.
Well, I am sensitive to a couple of things I should be sensitive to, and that one is if somebody is giving you what I think is the gift of their attention, which I do think is a gift, if someone's paying attention to something you're saying, and they're giving you their time, which is also finite, that it is, you are obliged not to waste it, or at least to try to honor that that gift. And so I wouldn't want to go to pay, you know, $20 to go see a play, and then the play is just somebody sitting there picking their nose and berating me or something. I don't know that I'd get too much out of that. And so I do try to you know, put effort into things. But the problem is that life interferes with that, especially with getting ideas or thinking clearly or even having the time or focus to execute something can be really a challenge. And I know that this is something that affects everybody. Like, you know, you get a job, right? And in the interview, you're on usually at your best. And then maybe that first week, you know, you're sort of at your best. And then, you know, then you have a spastic colon, or you have a sick mother, or you have neighbors that won't shut up so you can't sleep. And that affects your performance. It's hard to do a good job if other things are interfering.
So when other things are interfering with you, you were saying before that What people find irritating within art is if it appears that no effort has been done. So if, you know, if it's trashy, or if it's like an Andy Warhol thing where it's like a kind of fly on the wall type thing, or if it's John Cage like prolonging something a really long time and making it boring, people don't like it because that's like real life.
Oh, it's that's very true. That's very true. But there is a sort of doing that comes with... if somebody has a lack of self-awareness and they do that, I've seen, I had acquaintances on of social media sometimes that were artists, and they would post their art. And a lot of times it was art that was done quickly. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, right? But if
half-hearted.
Well, you know, it doesn't, if something is done quickly, that's fine. But if there's not a lot of internal work ahead of time, then that quickly is empty. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if I think about, like, if I'm going to do 3 brush strokes, all right, but I've thought about it for a month, right?
Yeah.
Then I do the three brush strokes. They're more likely to contain some sort of intrinsic truth or be, you know, because I've done it in my mind so much. So executing something swiftly or without great care, I mean, believe me, I mean, there's abstract art that's just as good as one of those portraits by Ong or something that Ong.
Pardon?
Ong.
Oh,
I-N-G-R-E-S. Okay. How do you say his name? Ong. Ong. Ong.
Sorry?
I-N-G-R. Isn't that how you spell his name? Look it up. You know what I'm talking. I should have said Bouguereau. But one of, you know, one of those beautiful, meticulous portraits from the past or something. You know, that looks like...
What's
their name? Ong. Are you looking it up?
Yeah. No.
Oh, well, why are you making me
say it a number of times?
Hey, like, I struggle with French. I'm not even going to pretend I don't. I don't
so
have any animosity. I don't even know. It might not have been.
I think some French people might disagree with you there.
What, that I struggle with it?
Oh. No, that was French in any way.
Oh, I know. They did that. They were so kind to me when I lived there and I would speak. They would say, one time I was speaking French at, I don't really speak much, and I was speaking French at a party. And a friend said, you speak just like Jacques Chirac, the president of France. And I was like, oh, thank you. And then they said, he speaks like a child. And I said, well, okay. you know, slowly and using very simple words. But what I'm saying is that a lot of times effort, and I talked about this a couple shows ago, doesn't always, you know, sometimes it's the mindset that you're in is most important. And for creativity or for imagination, you want to be as free as possible. Mm. And so this show, this live show I'm doing on Saturday, this Zoom benefit, it's about, the theme is imagination. And so you'd think I'm going to be very loose and imaginative. And yet I am really uptight because I know there's going to be a lot of people watching who paid money. And whenever they do that, I feel obligated to do something really well, and when I equate well with maximum effort and anguish, and I shouldn't, because I'm my best when I'm relaxed, or I'm my best when I feel playful. And
it's the money thing, though, isn't it? It's that when money comes between you and your intention and the other person, you know, it's like money gets in the way when in fact you could just pick it out and put it behind you.
Well, it's really hard not being a psychopath, because I realize that like people work hard for their money, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like, I have a conscience, and I'm thinking, well, gosh, you know, this is not nothing. We're asking money from it, you want something for that, but it's hard to know what the value of a thing is.
That's because you're not an entitled individual. You're like I am. You feel like labor equals money, whereas there's lots of people who don't think that way, who don't think for a moment that's the case. You know, I mean, one reason I make such detailed, long-winded, ridiculously long-winded work that where the process seemingly probably has little to do with the product is I feel like I've got to put a hell of a lot of time and an effort into something to be valid in some way.
Well, we've been, I've had the privilege, gosh, I hate to be serious.
Were we not being serious?
I'll say something playfully insulting in a minute, but for now I've had the privilege to be to be friends with you through a few major projects that you've done, a few major works, and I've also had the privilege of like discussing them with you at all phases of it, right? So you know. And I think that's wonderful. So I watch you So I'm a bit of a, and I fancy myself a bit of a people like us expert, because I've witnessed the process and I know what you go through. Whereas I don't think when just people look at the art, I mean, they're astounded by it, but I don't know if they know the price, like the personal price that you pay. Because I see, you know, not just the physical effort of sitting there for hours editing things at the computer, but like the coming up with ideas, like just the mental work and the internal work that you do. And then on top of that, like having to do all the paperwork that is required for artists to get to what they're entitled to, you know, for that degree of contribution to the culture. So I understand, you know, how much goes into it. And I have lots of artist friends, musicians and visual artists and writers and everything. And I see how they struggle, you know, sometimes just with ideas, much less getting something done. And then we all, whether we're artists or not, everybody has either something they like to do or some line of work. And I think we all, except for the people that have brains that don't consider these things, are all struggling to get it done. And so I'm really tuned into that, you know, and I have to be, I find to just to mitigate making a fool of myself on the radio, that it really helps to have some compassion and empathy in that way. Because, you know, it's really easy to be detached and say something stupid that erases people's experience. And I never want to do that. And I never want to be, you know, I don't mind doing or being in a position that I'm undeserving of, because I don't know that that's my fault. Like if somebody listens to the show or sees the thing on Saturday and they go, why this guy? I go, that's more on Ken than me, you know? I always thought when I get hired for a job, I go, well, if I end up being terrible, that's really on you, I think. You should have seen the signs.
Yeah, just blame the manager.
Well, it is. I mean, it really is. It is their fault, not mine. But at the same time, people do give you their attention and their loyalty. You know, I know people say, oh, I like your show, so I told somebody about it. And that is putting yourself out there. You know, I know that when I say I like a certain kind of music or anything, I know I put myself in the position of defending it often. And so, you know, that's just the way it is. So I know that the artist, even though I don't know them, probably appreciates the fact that you're, you know, going to bat for their art.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I sort of forget about the audience beyond just my personal contacts, because I come into so little contact with them, you know, in person. I mean, and on the radio, it feels more abstract, even though I know that people are listening, and you know, including right now, which is weird saying that because we're recording this. I think I've got a very short memory actually about things like that, because I've just put on social media today that I'm doing a concert to a real audience next month in France, and suddenly all these people popped up and said, oh, people like us, great, I love her work. And it's like, wow, who are you? And it's just bizarre, because I honestly don't, I do not think about audiences that I don't know. I just think about the people I know, because I guess I'm used to having such a low expectation of things going on a large scale or larger scale than my friends anyway, that I kind of protect myself and just think, well, as long as they see it and they get something out of it, I don't really mind about everything else. And, you know, like I've got an exhibition in upstate New York at the moment, which I can't go to. I've not got to witness any response whatsoever within the gallery or elsewhere. I've had no feedback whatsoever, apart from where I've secretly shared the content with friends who really like it. And a certain part of me, I feel right now, should be feeling disappointed about something or other, but I'm not, because but I think also it's to do with having a low expectation, not of anything being good or not, but just of reach, how I'm going to reach people. And so I think in a way, and unless someone was giving me a ton of money, I'd get that thing between me and them, like you're worrying about for your show on Saturday. But when it isn't like loads of money involved, or like some mega advertising, like the Emperor's New Clothes, like making out I'm something that any bigger than just another person on the planet, it doesn't really bother me. But I might be just protecting myself.
Well, I'm not a live performer, really. And every time I've done it, it's been a struggle, and I've either colossally failed at it, or it's at least been an emotional struggle. So the thing in upstate New York getting canceled, since I was supposed to do my thing live there was actually quite a boon. Because I was terrified. And I got to do it virtually, and I have literally heard nothing. I was only thinking about you seeing it.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying, is I've got zero expectations that it's not even about you lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, because I've never tried, for one. It's to do with, you don't really know what effect your work is having on people. Yeah, you can, every now and then you'll get someone say something that is either good, bad, or in the middle, but you don't actually really know how you're affecting the world, because it isn't like, it's like the gift economy, where the mm-hmm. concept that was more than concept, where what you give, you will get back, but it might not come from the direction you were focusing on at the time, or in the point of time that you're thinking about it. It's more that if you have a good intention about with a thought, as far as from a thought to an extremely long piece of work that you make, if you put it out there, you will get stuff back, but it isn't always in the way you thought. And so mm-hmm. I think I just kind of trust that when I do something, that it is reaching people, but it might not even be the thing that's reaching them, but it's the very fact of me just bothering
here,
makes something happen.
Here's what I struggle with, and why in-person stuff is more difficult than the radio stuff. When I'm on the radio, I usually think of, I think of the audience, but it's usually maybe one person. And sometimes it's a specific person that I know might need or want to hear what I'm saying. But the way I look at it is this. I try to be as sensitive as possible. Like, I try to open myself up to feeling things, even if they're difficult, right? Because if you're going to really understand your fellow human beings, then you have to let them, you have to let yourself feel their joy and their pain, right? I mean, you can't fully experience what they're going through, but you can open yourself up to it and let yourself, you know, feel it. So the analogy I always make is I do this without any armor on, right? So when you don't have armor on, you can feel people, and you can feel the strokes, right? You can feel when people say thank you and they pet your arm or something, but you also feel the blows. And even if they're unjust, so people say, oh, you know, ignore the criticism. And you say, well, you can't. If I'm going to feel things, I have to feel I can endure the criticism and I can get over it. But that's not to say I'm not wounded by it, even if it's unjust. So you feel everything. If I'm going to feel, I feel. There's no filter that just takes out, you know, like, oh, your opinion matters, but your opinion doesn't. Like, they all matter to me, and I do take them all in. I mean, the trick is recovering. And you have to recover from the compliments as well as the criticisms. Like, you have to get over both. Because the compliments can be crippling as well.
Oh my goodness. They, putting you you know, putting you on some massive, like, throne that you might topple off of at any moment, mm-hmm. yeah, is as bad as digging a hole that you might fall into.
Oh, and the worst thing is, like, when, like, if you were a cook, if you were a restaurant, I always have to equate it to something else because I'm never comfortable talking about the actual subject. But you go to a restaurant and somebody comes in and they taste something you've made and they rave and they blow it all out of proportion. This is the greatest thing I've ever tasted. This is amazing. This is, oh, I've never tasted anything like that. So they bring somebody in to have it. And then that person, it's not, maybe it's not exactly what it was, or maybe they just were remembering it wrong. And all of a sudden, you know, if that was the first time they'd come in, that's one thing. But now there's disappointment. Now there's resentment where there wasn't before. Like, sometimes it's a setup, you know what I mean? Like, I love being thanked, and that's different. But, like, if somebody, and this has not really happened to me, but I've seen it happen to others, and especially in music, you know, somebody would might get into an album or something, you put out another album, and they hate it. And now they, yeah. and now they hate you. You know, it's so odd. And I really, my heart goes out to especially people who have a really big audience and successful musicians. And you say, oh, you shouldn't pity them because they're compensated. Well, sometimes they're not as compensated as you think they are. Like, you know, people that are famous and not rich, right? I mean, I do too. And you think, well, you know, these are like human beings that are actually probably living at the same, you know, level as you are. And, you know, this is the fame is no compensation sometimes. I'm really happy with the listeners that I have, because it feels more like a family. Like, there's, you know, WFMU sort of, you know, is it's important and famous to the people who love it, right? Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of people that don't know about it. But
yeah, well, we've all got our worlds, haven't we? And WFMU is our world. Isn't
and
it?
I make no distinction between the people who have shows and the listeners who I know of, and even the listeners I don't know of. I mean, we're all there's an equality. It doesn't feel like, because they come and go. You know, people. Sometimes you're a listener. Sometimes you're a participant. And the people cross that barrier all the time, right? And volunteers too. You know, you come in. I make no distinction between the volunteers and the people that work there or used to work there. Or, you know how that is, right?
Oh yeah, WFMU changes all the time, but it's got this. It's still WFMU, and it's great that it changes all the time because it's got all these flavors to it. It's got its flavors over time and. You know, short term and long term, but also, you know, people generally don't go away from WFMU. You know, they might disappear for 10 years, but there's so many people come back. You know, as well.
And there's a chance you know them personally. That's the thing too. I remember I had a friend that was a music critic for our hometown paper, and he had a dream one time that he met this group that he had criticized. And sometimes this happens. In real life, right? Mm-hmm. You meet the people and you go, oh, they're really nice. It's much harder now, you know, to dehumanize them. And I think that's the way with the station, too. It's like the listeners, sometimes they know us personally. All they have to do is, like, come to a show or volunteer. So, I mean, none of these people are unapproachable superstars, most of them, right? They're people that you could literally have a meal with. And I think that changes everything too, because it's like we feel there's an equality that sometimes isn't there in the big entertainment world, where there's still stars and mortals. You know how it used to be in the old, like, oh, these are movie stars, and then there's us mere mortals. And
well, we all decide who's famous, don't we? You know, I mean. There's so many levels, aren't there? I mean, there's the established, there's the world of, you know, the consensus reality. But then, I mean, most people I know don't subscribe to that at all and don't even know what it is. I certainly don't. And so, you know, you've got the under the radar stuff, which I think a lot of what we involve ourselves with is below the radar. By the way, I've got this car alarm going off outside right now, and you're going to get very interesting listening if you listen. Oh, it stopped.
I can't hear. Yeah, I couldn't hear it when you said it was there.
Yeah, it's going wee-woo-wee-woo.
Your ears are more sensitive than the microphone.
Well, it sounds like the parakeets that fly over here all the time, which there's a myth. There is.
That's it. Did you just put the emphasis on the last syllable of that word?
Myth.
No. I thought I parakeet.
What?
You said parakeets.
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 Oh, stop it.
I'm just want to make sure that we're speaking the same language. I said I wouldn't point out any cultural differences, but I lied. I'm sorry.
There's this kind of... There it goes again.
It's nice. I like it. I thought it was...
Can you hear it?
Yeah, but I like it. It's like the bird in Mon Oncle.
It's like the parakeets.
Yeah.
Out of the top 10 most... what's it when it's lots of them? most of birds.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
The most birds uh-huh. that there is, uh-huh. that there's the same one of, right? Speaking is English as a first language, is the parakeet, is about number 4 out of 10. Uh-huh. And there's this myth about why have we got parakeets in London? You know, they're like little green parrots.
Oh, yeah. Are they're escaped pets?
Well, apparently it was from that film. What's his face in?
All this will be.
I'll tell you in 5 minutes.
All this is going to be edited out, so they won't even hear this part.
It's all right. Humphrey Bogart, and it was filmed about
Jungle
half
Queen?
A mile.
Is that filmed in London?
no, Queen. It's got a Queen in it. The title.
Okay.
Queen.
Jungle Queen.
No.
All right, I don't know then. It's got parakeets in it.
Yeah, and they were in the film.
Uh-huh.
And apparently they escaped, and that's why we've got parakeets in London. That is one theory.
Okay.
And the other theory is that people, when they kept exotic pets in the 60s, mm-hmm. that they let the parakeets go. And I think that's boring, because if that was true, they'd be
Oh,
lions.
That's why we have house finches here. House finches escaped from the 1920s. They're descendants of people used to keep little finches in bird cages, and I guess it was a fad there for a while. Also in
that's why we've got boa constrictors here
up by in New Jersey, like up towards Fort Lee. They got like wild green parrots. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, that freaked me out the first time I drove up that way. There's escaped parrots. Now, you know what I'm thinking? Now I can't stop picturing the comment board, because it's going to be...
They're going to be naming the film.
They're going to... Every place that has escaped exotic birds is going to be listed. So there's one time I seen a macaw. And they live... You know, a lot of those parrots live in the sewers. With the people flushed parrots, and now they live down there with monkeys and alligators.
And snakes.
Oh, giant ones, as long as a city block.
You bite your bum.
They will. And also kappas, the Japanese river demon, that reach up into you and grab your butt soul.
Your bum garner.
Oh, yay. That's a...
Yay.
We have our
you
mutual
bum
love
bum Garner.
of Jim Rockford.
Yeah.
Yeah. James Garner, that's his real name, folks.
James Bumgarner.
I don't know that it's... Is it Bum or Baum?
Bum.
Bum? Bumgarner? I'm sure it's from Baumgar, like tree gardener.
Bum. Bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah. Bum, oh, bum, bum, what joy he gave us. I like the Rockford. I haven't talked about Rockford Files in a long time.
No.
I was really obsessed with doing an Angel Martin impression there for a while. Jimmy.
You did one, didn't
Jimmy,
though, didn't
I did,
you?
Jimmy. I'm sorry, Jimmy. I did for a long time. I get on kicks where I do, I don't, That's a throwback to being a little kid.
African Queen.
African Queen. Was I calling it Jungle Queen?
Yeah. I don't think.
I think that's a boat at Disney World.
That's the naughty, naughty version.
Oh, I'm sorry. African Queen. I pictured Catherine Hepburn and he in some kind of old boat.
It was filmed near my house here.
The jungles of... Because it's very jungly near Heathrow. Isn't it? There's lots of swamp and... Well, maybe they could go back in a time machine because isn't London's built on a marsh, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's... I don't know.
No, yes. The answer is yes.
Yes, yes. Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. I know this.
What you said is correct.
I know. Well, I got it from Time Team. So.
All right. Well, there you go then.
They're all... They've got to be right.
Where I live now has got all sound effects the whole time. This recording has got parakeets, mm-hmm. A massive load of police just went by, a massive aeroplane just went over. It's going to be like Foley and Vicky.
I really can't hear it though. I used to.
You'll be able to get. You will hear.
So it. I used to live in a town in Florida, and that town before it was developed had an attraction called Africa USA. And what they did is they took the Florida jungly forest there, and they made an attraction where they brought all sorts of exotic animals, and they didn't even have to be from Africa. You know, it was just that was the general buzzword for exotica, right? So, but they had like all monkeys and all sorts of crazy birds and everything. So when they closed it, they gathered up all the exotic animals. I don't know if they had lions, but you know, they got all the monkeys and everything, but they could not get the peafowl. So they could not the peafowls are elusive creatures. And so they built a suburban neighborhood there. They built a development there, and the peafowl persisted. And peacocks make the most horrible blood-curdling sound. That sounds like a child being choked.
Oh,
it's awful, right? You've heard them. Right. So if you're at somebody's house, I used to spend the night at a friend's house. And I go, what is that? In Tallahassee, I forget what kind of owls they are.
I can't remember anything now.
Oh, I don't know. Not barn owls, but the other kind.
Tawny.
No, don't go through that.
I only know those.
Barn owls or something.
Snowy owls.
No. But these owls, when it was mating season, they like to go into the live oak trees, and they sound exactly like you imagine monkeys sounding. Right. So you're like that. And I was the first time I ever saw it, I was like, man, there's monkeys. There's monkeys in the live oak tree. And it wasn't. It was just these barred owls. There you go. I don't know what we were talking about. For some reason, this has something to do with the show. Oh, this is good, though. This is relaxing me. You're like my therapist. See, because I need to get relaxed because if my whole point on this Saturday show is imagination, right? And I want to advocate people being more imaginative or relaxing and being playful. It seems that I'm working against that by being anxious about it, would you not say? I guess some of it is just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but when you're actually doing it, you're not anxious, are you?
No. I was just going up to that point. It's like, oh, I hope Ken doesn't yell at me or something.
But aren't you just anxious about the technicalities?
Yes, actually, yes, I am. Because it's not because I involved a lot of people. So I'm going to a proper studio to do it. It's not in my home.
Listen, it's their fault. It's their fault. It's not your fault.
Oh, right. No, you're right. You're right. It's their problem.
Yeah.
Blame it, yes.
And if it really goes wrong, Ken's problem.
I know. Well, that doesn't make me feel any better because I like the man. I don't want to. He's a human being.
Ken saying years ago, he's going, have you ever heard Hearty White show? And I was like, no. And that's how I listened, because Ken said. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. You know what he said to me right before? He didn't mean it this way, but I was about to go on to do a live Monty Hall show. And he said, I was about to go on and he said, so I fired somebody so that you could have your show. implying we were talking about how nobody is irreplaceable, and I was like, man,
yeah, right.
I knew that, but what I was thinking is you could tell me that after I did the performance,
yeah,
so that I wouldn't have as much intestinal gas to be battling as I went up there in front of everybody. It took me a long time to be able to stand up and actually look at people's faces while I was performing. Because it's sometimes you take your, like my whole thing is I want to be empathetic, right? I want to be but sometimes once you get on stage, that is, you don't want to be too empathetic because
you'll lose your thread.
Right. And you start to get lost in people's face. And I would mistake, like, not everybody's listening and enjoying face is obvious. Right.
Well, that's why you shouldn't wear your glasses, but you don't, do you?
Well, what I'd ask, I go aim the light right in my eyes, so I can't see anything, and like blind me.
Mm.
You know, because I'd like. Oh, and one time, you know, so a couple of days ago was the anniversary of my friend David's death, and I remember going there the year after he died, and he would come to these live shows. He'd drive up from Baltimore. And I remember one time I could see the audience, like and my friend Scott was like sitting in the same chair that David sat in.
I was sitting next to him at the time,
and I was just like that hit me, and I'm in the middle of doing my thing, blah 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 blah, Shemp Howard, and I just start thinking about that, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Yeah. Like, you know, that's the worst possible thing you could do.
Yeah.
And think about that later or something, man. Yeah. Not right now. And I don't want to be like, I know that I'm like I err on the side of sentimentality, and I don't want people to think I'm like, oh, I'm sappy, or I'm trying to, I'm always trying to go for some cheap sentimentality or something. That's not the case. I'm just really attached to people. And it just comes out sometimes, you know? I get and I just appreciate being, I think if you haven't, I'm really thankful that I've been like profoundly rejected in my past by family, because it makes you appreciate not acceptance, but on the other hand, it also makes you a little too appreciative of that, maybe a little too needy or something, you know. I don't want to do that, so I fight that a lot of times as talking to people. I love to expose process too. I love to demystify, like if I do anything that's interesting or creative to people, I immediately want to tell them how I do the trick. Because I really want everybody to do it. Like, I don't want anybody to think that I do something that they can't do. Mm. And some of it is just like stupid confidence. Like, if you think you can do something, and then other people think you can, you sort of can. That's why it's good to encourage kids no matter what, because it goes a long way, that encouragement. It really, really does. Like, even if it's not 100%. You know, accurate. You need that confidence to even do it, because
to get to the next level.
Yeah. Because you got to do it long enough. You got to endure all the failures and all the learning process and the process of doing it wrong. Like, and I was just so blessed that, you know, I've been in radio a long time now, and I mean, going on like 30 years, and that came from like in the. I didn't know what I was doing at the beginning. And I say, well, how would anybody let you speak for an hour? Well, low stakes, first of all, you know, on college radio, nobody cares. And I was allowed to make a lot of mistakes. And then I got encouragement. And that's what made me better, is just time plus encouragement. And so that's why I see it as a partnership between the people I'm speaking to and me, you know, we are in it together. Like you're...
Well, opportunities are really important. I mean, yeah, I did my first radio show in 1990, so that's 30 years, and that was at midnight, and probably not many people were listening, and I'm glad I haven't got the recordings now. But, you know, I was given the opportunity to do that. You know, someone took a chance because it was low stakes that I was to get to do this. And no one else probably even wanted to do it. But the very fact that I did that, it got me walking the path, you know, rather than just standing there looking at it and wondering if it's a mirage or something.
Yeah. Yeah, you're almost like a, you know, if you do something for long enough, it might not be, you know, you might not be excellent at it or something, but you're gonna be interesting. Like if anybody's persisted at something for decades, it's usually interesting, you know, because it's a beautiful thing what time does and experience.
Yeah.
And a lot of people quit. You know, when it gets rough, and that's not 100% their problem. It's all of our problems that we don't encourage, that we don't provide a better understanding to people that, you know, that everything is hit and miss, and that if you're going to be playful and inventive, some things, the thing about experiments is a lot of them are not supposed to work. And I think that's something that people misunderstand about science, too. They don't understand that science is a process of, like, getting an idea, testing it, and then, you know, whoops, that isn't right. But that contributes as much to the advance of science as when you guess correctly. Because somebody has to do that to prove that's not true. Like, somebody's got to set out to prove it one way or another. So you could spend your whole career in science having an idea, doing an experiment, and your idea is wrong. But see, you took one for the team because now somebody else doesn't have to do that experiment. You write it up and you go, well, it isn't this. It isn't A. It isn't B. It isn't C. It isn't D. I'm retired.
It is team,
and then somebody
it is
goes,
teamwork.
Yeah, it's all. And there's people that, in science at least, there's people there to hold your feet to the fire and criticize it and examine it. And I love that. And you know, sort of art is the same way. People get down on critics, you know, but we need them as long as they're not, you know, as long as they don't stop the process. You know, you sort of like need people to say, you know, what's working, what's not working, what's good, what's not as good, what's brilliant, what's, you know, mediocre. That's okay. That's okay, too. But I just don't think there's not universal better or best. You know, it really is like in the moment.
Not with art, there isn't. And just like there isn't an end point for whether something is correct in a science either. I mean, you know, to a certain point there is correctness, but I mean, there's always going to be more information coming forward, which will change the bigger picture.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you were taking a science test hundreds and hundreds of years ago and they said, does the sun revolve around the earth, and you said no, you would have gotten it wrong, right? But I mean, so we are learning all the time, and it does change, but it's got to keep moving. At least got to keep moving, keep making whatever you're doing, friend. I'm gonna talk right to the audience now, friend. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. We need all of you to do your thing. We need all of you to be imaginative. That's how it works. You know, a handful of people don't do the work. And yeah, they're going to rise to the top. And there's just one David Bowie or something like that. You know, there's just one people like us. But you know, everybody contributes to it. And
there's definitely many of both as well.
There really are. There's so many. You know what? There's David Bowie's who had struggles. I mean, not that he didn't, but I mean, yeah. You know, there's people that are hidden geniuses that you've never heard of because there's other, you know, they're physically not well, or there's stuff that comes up in their life, or they're, you know, it's.
Well, you know, Brian Eno calls it senius, which I like. It means it's never one person. There's the genius isn't an individual thing. It's a, you're a product of everything around you that came before and is to come. And so a senius is someone who is doing something remarkable, but it's never on their own, and because no one's an island. And so we're all, because there's unity, mm-hmm. not diversity. There is diversity. There's not duality. It means that we're all contributing to everything within ourselves and outside of ourselves and all around us. So therefore, we're all part of some kind of scene, and whether it's senius or just being like an idiot, you're responsible for everything around you as well as yourself, and what you put into it.
There's nothing worse than the implication that, like, I hear this in music, that so-called one-hit wonders are somehow failures. You know, this idea that you had this great song, first of all, which no one individual is probably responsible for, right? Stuff comes together, as you know.
Yeah.
But, like, how on earth is that a failure? Also, no-hit wonders. Like, there's people and artists who have amazing careers and bodies of work. Maybe not any one thing stands out. But over time, you go, wow, this is a beautiful thing. You know, look at this, all this change. And I've been so inspired by things like that and people like that, you know?
Well, it's consensus reality as well. It's like this idea that we have this idea of fame, that is the benchmark of success. It's a very small amount of people and things selected within that tiny, shallow little world that's forever just like being dismissed after or seen or hyped up or dismissed again. And actually the main part of everything going on is fairly invisible, if not invisible. But we all influence each other, and you know, people get a fame or notoriety for something that they've done. It doesn't mean that they're there any more important than all the people that maybe, you know, you, like with music or whatever, you might hear on WFMU or what you might see on some forum or some little online thing that you know, or just a group of people. And this is just talking about our world as well, and there's whole other worlds on our planet as well that we have no contact with, because, you know, I'm a British person talking to an American person. You know, what do we know about all these other famous worlds that are even famous?
Oh,
we haven't got a clue.
No, I know, none.
No idea.
My world is very small. And,
mine too.
And the, you know, but, and I don't want myself or others to ever mistake that bigger nebulous world that doesn't, you know, involve you necessarily, to the one that you have impact on. You know what I'm saying? Like my the older I get, my friends and people I know are always been important to me, but they're getting even more important. And I feel this sense of the quality to them that I didn't, you know, when you're young, maybe you're more competitive, even with friends or something, but I have this, you know, now that I've known people long enough to see them struggle and see life happen to them, it's just being in their presence, just knowing that we're there for each other. It means a ton to me, like more than any, I don't need as much validation as I did when I was a young person. You know, I've got much more to give now, I think. Like now I can give freely. Like to think that this, you know, if this conversation is not for you, not you, I mean, one listener, I get that, right? But, you know, it is for somebody. I think it is. Like I think there are people that would be interested in hearing you and I talk about this in frank ways, about our own struggles with just getting things done in our own, you know, modest careers. You know, I mean, maybe they're not always modest, right? You know, but I guess neither of us are what would you call household names.
No.
I'm a little closer because I'm on a loaf of bread. So some people do literally have my name in their pantry, on their Pepperidge Farm, Hardy White.
You know, you were saying earlier about the amount of we were saying about the amount of time that you put in something means that therefore it must be better, or if something's done really quickly that you know you could easily dismiss it. You know, I was thinking about sports, right? So if you're running the 100 meters, right, and you take like I don't know 11 seconds. If supposing people went, well, that didn't take very long.
It's true. Yeah, that's just you should do it by pulling some sort of huge weight or something. Yeah, yeah, that's very true. And even like if something just sometimes I have to talk, and I've said this a billion million times, but I have to talk for a long time to say like 2 seconds of truth or wisdom or something.
That was mine then.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know how it is. Like, some of us have to just work in sheer volume. What am I going to do? Like, I got to do a show every week. I can't, like, wait a year and just cull out all this, the interesting stuff I said. I've got to.
Yeah, well, that's why I make such a large amount.
I got to let you take this. You got to take the shell off. You got to take the bones out. I can't, you know. Yeah. I give you the whole thing, and you peel it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've.
By the way, if you're hearing weird noises at the moment, it's because my cat is sitting next to me and he's kind of licking all these things and doing all this yawning and stuff all the way around.
I'm not insulting the quality of your microphone because I know that you're a professional, but I really don't hear any of these things. You might want to get like a contact mic and actually put it on the cat.
Okay, well, he's biting me at the moment.
I can't hear it. What I would do is I would get one of those little contact mics, put it right on his canine teeth.
Right.
And then I know that, is that kind of, do cats have canines?
Yeah.
They got fangs, right? It's unfair. Fangs. They should be called felines, and dogs should just have to live with that.
What are you going on about?
I don't know. People have already, they'd be tuning out if they weren't waiting, tuning in early for Kevin's show. That's what I
think. We should have done this as a benefit.
Benefit. Well, that people why am I giving money to this station again? I mean, they could console themselves in that we're not getting it.
No, I figure this will be nice to listen to when we're old.
Yeah. We'll be by the time it broadcasts, we'll be old, I think.
Yeah, older.
Oh, it's so good to talk with you.
Yes.
It's always great. It makes me feel more normal, you know?
Does it?
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, it's just you get inside your own head. And you got to do, that's why you got to talk to, you got to do reality checks.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people use, it's allergies, a lot of people use social media for that. Sometimes that is a, that can be a trap, though, because people don't care about you chime in. But
that's not a reality check. That's an insanity check.
Oh, I know. God. Yeah. Oh, God. Just write me directly or something if you've... Mm. And I'll go, yes, you're right, whether you are or not.
Mm-hmm.
I really thank everybody and tune into this... I'm going to thank all the... we did at the end, I want to talk about the... Just we are in the middle of the Hellraiser. And I'm going to thank all the, I haven't thanked anybody yet. I'm going to thank them in a big musical thank you at the end, where I'm going to say all their names to a beat at the end. So you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for joining myself and Vicki Bennett, people like us, an amazing friend and an amazing artist. I'm so lucky and privileged to know you and to be a fan and a friend. And
likewise.
Thank you for everything that you do for me and for the world. And we will
thank you.
We will both see you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Fail. Heaven and earth. surely must die. They close my Lord in a judgment row. They let him on down about the judgment hall. When he got down there, the high priest said, we'll whip this man Jesus until the break of day. John began to look over Calvary's hill. He said he heard a rumbling like a chariot wheel. They said, oh John, what does that mean? Said, that's those cruel Jews are whipping my Jesus. But one of these days, Gabe was gonna blow his trumpet so loud, the saints are gonna rise, the heaven and the cloud. Sea is gonna boil and cause one big flood. The moon is gonna drip away just like blood. Some is gonna come up and try to hide their face, but the rocks are gonna cry out, no hiding place. You run to the valley, the lightning will be flashed, but my God's word will never pass away. You run to the hillside, trees will be bending, but my God's word will never pass away. His word, his word, his word, yes, will never pass away.
Yep.